The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I'm fascinated by the latest thing from Iran. I know we've spoken a lot about Iran, and I'm not going to talk long about Iran today for those people who might be rolling their eyes at another conversation about Iran. But this really does justify just a few comments. A new law has been enacted by President Rouhani in Iran, banning the use of Israeli products and Israeli technology.
Yeah, we spoke about that.
Which, of course,
that.
Is
wow.
Fascinating.
I suppose
so,
he's doing everything
so
he can to
go back.
They're
going to have to send all their computers back,
yeah.
Right?
He's going all the way back to the 17th century then, is he, Rad?
Yeah.
I mean, he has been trying for a while.
Anyway, that was just a little snippet which I guess you guys picked up on, but
yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean it's just whatever, you know. There's nothing more really that we can say about it.
The one subject one of the subjects that I wanted to talk to you about is a conversation that we've been following very, very closely here, and that is the story of Malka Leifer. Finally, yesterday, the court reached a good decision. Tell me. Just for anybody who doesn't know the story and who Malka Leifer is, give us a quick overview and tell us what happened.
Malka Leifer is somebody who lived in Australia for many years, and she was the headmistress of an Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox school in Australia, in Melbourne. And she stands accused of some conduct which is really not becoming a teacher or headmistress of school, and there are a number of victims have spoken out against sexual misconduct against her. It seems as if she somehow managed to become involved with certain of the girls who were in her school and sexually abused them. I mean, there's just no other way of saying it. That's what she stands accused of. Howard, I know you feel very, very strongly about this, and you feel that she almost has given up her right to innocence until proven guilty, because there's so much anecdotal evidence against her, and so much what they would call, there's a great Yiddish term which has been adopted in Israel and is in common use, and I think it applies very much to this case, and the term is feulishtik, you know, kind of dirty actions, dirty behavior on so many different levels. She has feigned psychiatric problems, mental health issues, which she has claimed prevents her from being extradited to Australia. Of course, Australia has requested her extradition formally so that she can stand trial in Australia. There have been so many different issues going on, including allegations that former Health Minister Yaakov Litzman was involved in intimidating staff within the Health Ministry in order to somehow protect Malka Leifer against what the courts, had wished to look at in terms of her mental health. Finally, the Jerusalem District Court, after almost 6 years that this trial has been going on, ruled yesterday in the form of the Jerusalem District Court Judge Hana Miriam Lomp, who seems to have really stuck her neck out and looked at the case for what it really is. The judge decided that Malka Leifer is fit to stand trial, she is fit to be extradited, and that she understands the legal proceeding against her, and she is able to defend herself against the allegations, and that's really what counts. That is really the critical issue about whether she's mentally fit to stand trial or not. She understands what's going on, you know, what she's being accused of, and she is able to defend herself. And so under those circumstances, after another panel of psychiatrists reviewed her case earlier this year, they decided that she's fit to stand extradition and she's fit to stand trial when she is eventually sent to Australia. But, of course, that's not a foregone conclusion, because she still has rights to appeal, and she will appeal. And this could even go as far as the High Court of Justice in this country before she's finally extradited. And I think the most important thing is not only the victims of this case, who are clearly the most important element, because there's just so much bad behavior that's been conducted as alleged by these victims. And not only one or two, but it seems to have been a whole series of bad conduct on her behalf. So it's not just an isolated incident, her word against mine, but it seems to be their word against mine, so many people coming forward. The issue really in recent years is that this has been a huge barrier between the good relations has been a barrier of, it's really affected the relations between Australia and Israel, not only at an intergovernmental level, but indeed the Australian Jewish community with Israel, who feel that the Israeli justice system and certain individuals who seem to have really put barriers in the way have prevented people from getting their just rewards in terms of allowing at least this person to stand trial and to answer the accusations against her. And she feels so strongly that she is innocent of what's being accused, what she's being accused of, then perhaps she should go to court and make those defense statements and allow justice to take due process. So, good news for those people and of course for the relations with Australia and the Australian Jewish community. However, unfortunately, there is still a long way to go until the appeal process is exhausted.
Is there likely to be an investigation into the behavior of Litzman, the health minister at the time, and all others who seemed complicit in, who appear to be complicit, and obviously we don't know that that's the case, in defending her or trying to keep her out of the court system?
There isn't a formal announcement about that, but certainly very strong, credible accusations have been leveled against him and against some other people. And that has got as far as the Attorney General, who's picked up those issues and has indicated that former Health Minister Yaakov Litzman very likely has a case to answer for his behavior in this particular matter. As of now, he hasn't been formally charged, but we certainly hope that those charges will be forthcoming on the basis of some of those statements that have been made. So at the moment, no indications, but we all hope that, you know, in the fullness of time, he will have to answer for his behavior on this case as well.
The Mossad yesterday officially separated itself from Israel's national COVID-19 special operations. Tell us about this.
Yes, so the Mossad were very involved, particularly in hunting down supplies for Israel, because, of course, just as the COVID-19 virus came out and everybody was hunting for protective equipment and ventilators and masks and things like that, the Israeli government decided to enlist the help of the Mossad in order to get the necessary equipment for Israel that was so difficult to get on the international market. And yesterday, finally, the Mossad chief, Yossi Cohen, held a meeting with the IDF Chief of Staff Kochavi and also the outgoing Health Ministry Director General Moshe Bar Simantov, who were the people who were very much involved in managing the coronavirus issue. The meeting was held at the National Coronavirus Control Center, Chiba Medical Center, at Tel HaShomer Hospital in Tel Aviv. And just to give you an idea of some of the things that the Mossad were involved in terms of helping Israelis to protect themselves against corona, apparently right now as we speak, there are another 14 million masks that are on their way to Israel that have been acquired by the Mossad in the international market. All in all, apparently they managed to hunt down 80 million surgical masks to bring to Israel. Not only that, but 180 million pairs of gloves, hundreds of millions of drugs to help people who need a treatment. Apparently 1,300 ventilators were acquired over the past couple of months when they were needed. And apparently there's another almost 5,000 ventilators that have been ordered and that are expected to arrive in Israel before October, when there is a certain expectation, I would even say, that there might be a second wave as we go back into our winter season and there might be another outbreak of corona. So there's another 4,700 ventilators that are on order and that will be brought around. And they also brought in 2 million coronavirus test kits. So the Mossad were very, very instrumental in being a kind of a supply chain. They really hunted down these things and it needed special skills and connections in order to be able to acquire all of this equipment, because as I said before, it was really, really tough to acquire. So yesterday, finally, both the IDF and the Mossad were stood down from the coronavirus special program, and they were allowed to get back to their main business, which is obviously not acquiring equipment for coronavirus, but it does show that, you know, sometimes the skills that you acquire in undertaking spying activities and special protective security activities on behalf of the State of Israel do equip you to acquire equipment for coronavirus. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Indeed, a strange one, but at least being put to very good use. Other subject that I wanted to discuss with you is that there is an Israeli government. The Israeli government has awarded the construction of a new desalination plant to an Israeli company. Is there politics involved in this decision? Because I believe that there was a Chinese company that was bidding for it.
So there was a Chinese company in the form of Hutchinson, which is actually an Israeli company which was formed by Hutchinson, an affiliate of Hutchinson, which is based in Hong Kong. And they were one of the bidders in the Sorek 2 private-public partnership that will be the world's largest reverse osmosis seawater desalination plant due to be completed in 2023. The company that ultimately was awarded this contract is IDE Technologies, and they already are well known in the Israeli market because they already run another desalination plant. So one could quite strongly and easily argue that this was awarded to the most appropriate company, one with a good track record, one that apparently even provided the lowest cost of water per cubic meter, apparently about 65 ogorot cheaper than even the existing desalination plants that Israel is operating. So on the face of it, it seems to have been a very justified decision to award this to IDE. However, of course, there is always this issue of China in the background, and not only China, but the amount of pressure that is being brought to bear by the US government on the Israeli government to somehow cease its links with China. And we discussed this a few days ago, that the US government is having this ongoing conflict with China over certain 5G technologies and certain issues that the US government is having with China. And in order to try to impose its will upon the Chinese, the US government is also enlisting the help of its allies in order to cut down links with the Chinese government. And so there is no doubt that this decision that was taken will be a relief to the US government and will bring further pressure on US-China relations. I think that as far as Israel is concerned, it's just kind of business as usual because, you know, as I say, on the face of things, it seems as if this desalination plant that was awarded to IDE was awarded very justifiably and on a just impartial basis to give the best bid the opportunity to carry it out. So this is really going to be something very interesting, that by the time we get to 2023, when this desalination plant comes on board, something like 85% of Israel's domestic household municipal water needs will be satisfied by desalinated water. I think that's an unbelievable statistic.
Unbelievable. Absolutely incredible. Certainly a world leader in that regard. It's a pity Iran can never ever make use of that technology now either. And so we go full circle. It's about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning.